Partaya, oh sorry, we start with this. Om Garnana Antwa Garnapati Gumava Mahe Kavinka Vinam Upamashravastamam Jyeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspata Anashrin Vanutibhe Seda Satanam Om Shri Maha Garnapataye Namaha Sada Shiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Paryantam Vande Guru Paramparam Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranam Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusandadhami Bhagavat Gite Bhavatveshinim Sarvopanishado Gavaha Dogdhagopalanandanaha Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gitamritam Mahat Iyam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Marutaha Stumvanti Divyaistavaihi Vedai Sangha Padakramo Panishadaihi Gayantiyam Samagaha Dhyana Vasthita Tadgatena Manasa Pashyantiyam Yoginaha Yasyantam Navidusura Suragana Devaya tasmai namaha Om sahana vavatu sahana bhunaktu saha viryam karavavahai tejasvina vadhitamastu mavit vishavahai Om shanti 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 Dear Arjuna is discussing with Shri Krishna his issue, and we don't have any issues, so we're just interested in it, so no problem. There's actually a story of Hanumanji. I've heard this. Namaskar. Hanumanji listened to this whole Gita, and there's a commentary, they say, by Lord Hanuman here to give some, and Shri Krishna wasn't happy. He listened, he wasn't part like this. There's so many stories like this that put in Puranas to make some interest. The main thing is what the teaching is. You can, let's say you get that commentary, whoever wrote it says it's by Lord Hanuman, so maybe it was inspired by Hanuman to write it. We can learn something from a good. This is the main thing like this, because one time, years back, I picked up, there was a small booklet on the teachings of the Gita. And I thought it was Swami Venkateshananda. He was just very brilliant disciple, Swami Shivananda. Very, very brilliant. He used to go with Swami Shivananda on the tours. All day Swami Shivananda would give talks in different places. At night time, he would take out his typewriter and write everything Swami Shivananda said like this. He was very brilliant. But he was very, you know, very sweet. And this was very cutting sharp, like very no nonsense, this booklet. In the end, because I misread it, Swami Vivekananda. And Swami Vivekananda, what he was saying is, the pandits will argue, is Gita historical fact or not? And they get into all these arguments. And he said, what difference does it make to you? What can you learn from it? So here, if you want to know historical fact in this, you can go study in this. We're not looking into that. We're looking into what you learn from it is the important thing like this. Did Shri Krishna actually avatar come to the world in this or not of this? In the end, what is Shri Krishna teaching is what's going to really make a difference for our lives like this. That part we don't need, you know, we can speculate, but then we don't need to get into it. It's not as important because not the essence of what's being talked about like this. So in any case, so our dear Arjuna has his both incidental problem and the deeper existential problem. And the incidental problems in all our lives, they are always coming and going in different forms, but the same kind of, in the end, it's the same kind of issue, just in different forms. And then we can get the more topical treatment to take care of it, and that those are necessary too. If I have some disease and it's very painful, then yes, I'm going to want to take care of the root cause, but also take care of the pain so I don't suffer right now. So both are needed. But here, the most important thing is the going to the root. So that's what the whole, what Sri Krishna is mostly doing, to go to the root of the problem, like this. So for this, of course, he's teaching Vedanta, because when you get to what's, look at something, the bigger picture, the small stuff gets very small, insignificant, like this, you know. That's why a lot of times the elder people, they're old, right? They've gone through life, and then younger people come in some big thing, and for them it's just like, okay, because they see a bigger picture, they've seen 70, 80 years, and this person's seen 20 years, and thinks this one thing is going to be a big issue. And the old person knows, well, within a few weeks or a few months, this thing's going to be water under the bridge. But right now it seems like a big thing. So from the Vedantic perspective, lifetimes is the same thing as that little water under the bridge in the end, because of the perspective. So in any case, so here we got to verse 16, and verse 16 really gives a nice point what Vedanta is saying, and then of course so much more we have to look into, because it, one thing that that an analogy that's given is if I go to learn physics, and you go first class introduction, you know, you go undergraduate first class physics, the teacher gives overview and says the main thing we're going to learn, if you stay with this and do your master's with me, you learn E equals MC squared. He'll say a few words about it. You'll understand some general thing. Do you really understand how matter and energy are the same? Well, some idea of it. You keep looking into the subtlety, and then, so this is where, like, verse like this one tells you the E equals MC squared of Vedanta, this type of thing, but then we have to keep looking into the subtlety for it to really have that effect. For me, for the student who's learning the E equals MC squared, and then apply it in something, it'll take them some time, slowly, for them to understand. So the same thing, that's why we have to be patient looking into these things, to slowly look at it more subtle and closer, like that. So in any case, let's read the verse and then discuss. Na sato vidyate bhavah.
Na sato vidyate bhavah.
Na bhavo vidyate satah.
Na bhavo vidyate satah.
Ubhayorapi drishtontah.
Ubhayorapi drishtontah.
Tvanayostattvadarshibhihi.
Tvanayostattvadarshibhihi.
So it's saying in English, there is no existence for the unreal. There is no non-existence for the real. The truth of both these is indeed seen by the seers of reality. So we discussed here that what happens is, when you see any object, then there are two... It has two different natures, we can say. The swabhavika, which is its essential, what is essentially its nature there, exactly what's there. And agantuka. Agantuka is some attribute, but it's a temporary attribute, not intrinsic to it. Because temporarily was put in that form, like this. So it's put like that, but it'll be for some time, and then that, since it's not, its essential nature, meaning it won't necessarily stay like that in this way. So there's a very nice example given for this to show this, is you got up in the morning and you know it's cold and you're a little hungry, so you put the pot of water on the stove in order to heat it up so you can have some tea or coffee or something like this. So what happens is the flame will heat the pot, and the pot then will heat the water will boil. Now let's say you turned it off, you got busy, you went and did something else. You come back after 15 minutes, now the water went back to room temperature in this way. So what happens is the water was hot, right? But its nature is not heat. That's not its nature. That's why it was hot, but it was a temporary quality that borrowed from the fire, right? The water said, I want some heat, you know, it's cold today, you know, it's Minneapolis in Fremont. and then what happens is, so tells the pot, can you please lend me some heat? I'm cold today. So the pot said, let me see, my friend the fire maybe will help because I don't have heat this moment, I'm cold too, and asked the fire then lends it some heat, and this one lends it to the water, like this. So also the pot, it's not its essential nature, so it cooled down after a little while too. But the fire, did the fire cool down? If you put the fire on again, you'll put it on again because you want to boil the water. So the fire, it's nature. So this way, the nature of fire is heat, so it'll always be hot. You can't make the fire not hot. You know, I want not hot fire. There are some other chemical things I know, some chemicals won't, but we're talking in general to get the idea. So its essential nature is this. So something's essential nature will always be there. Something's intrinsic, that's intrinsic. Something else is conditional. In certain conditions it'll be there, in certain conditions it won't. So you can't essentially count on it in this way. So this is what's being pointed out. Now, so this means that an attribute that is not essential to something, where did it come from? It has to be borrowed from something else. It doesn't just fall out of the sky. No attribute is just there for no reason whatsoever. So what happens, it borrows it, meaning that that borrowed thing isn't, the heat is really fire. That's why when we look at this one model of seeing the world made out of five elements, then heat is fire. So the heat in the water is really fire manifests, or Agni manifests. And then when Agni unmanifests, then it's not there, like this. Of course, Agni everywhere, there's some heat everywhere in the world, it's just in gradation. But water, that's not its nature, like this. So that's why it's not going to, if it's borrowed, it will be for some time, right? Gata asuna, gata asuncha, it comes, means it will soon go, if it's not nature. So this is where we said then, okay, so if I look at the pot, then the pot, there's clay and there's pot. What is pot? It's a temporary, it's a form with the name that we gave, some temporary condition of clay. So really what's there is clay. There's no substance called pot. There's only a name we gave to a certain form with a certain utility, like this, that's it. It's not anything more than this. So now you say, okay, so what is clay? Clay is also made from something else, right? So also the clay. If you keep going down eventually, there has to be a substance, because anything changing, meaning an attribute that changes, means it's from somewhere else, so something else is behind it. So we say then the thing that's temporarily there, we call mithya, because it has a borrowed existence. It doesn't have its own existence. Because pot doesn't have an existence, clay has an existence. Pot is just a temporary thing. You keep going down. Eventually, the natural thing of everything, what's really in it through everything, will always be there. Like this. The other one will just temporary. So that's why we call satyam that which is always there. Mithya that which seems to be there. The word myth. Interesting, because with th, why like this? Mithya, because mithya is also the ta, or th, like this. So it probably comes from the same thing as mithya. So meaning a myth, something based on some deeper truth, but a lot of elaborations put on it, like this. So the base of the appearance is something, but what you see is what is really there. You see some appearance like this. So this is how, and then one of the nice examples given for this is when you have the mirage, you see the water. Where I grew up in southern area in Israel, you know, when you drive on the road, you see the water, you know, you always see a little bit. Half of the time you'll see, you know, I don't know, half a kilometer ahead, you see the water on the road like this. But you never think of it because you just know, you know, you never think there's water there. You just see the reflection. It's just part of what you see. You know it's not there like this. So that the water you see on the road ahead is going to be because of the heat and because of, you know, certain the sun, certain thing makes it appear to be there. So what happens is the appearance, the base is because of the heat and because of the air molecules and everything. Because of those, that's really what's there. But then what appears to be there is different, like this. So this is what happens. One very interesting thing, this is before, this is, you know, BC, before anybody, BC meaning also before modern science. Then Adi Guru Shankara's Guru's Guru, Gaudapada Acharya, he wrote a commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad, of the major Upanishad study, the last one usually studied. And in there, his last chapter is called Alata Shanti Prakaranam. Alata Shanti, the Alata is the torch, and talked about when you spin the torch, there's a circle. Does a circle have an existence? There's no real circle there, it's just the light. Light seeming to appear in that way. Interesting how he talked about this. He gave that as the example, and isn't it very much like the particles are spinning, coming in and out of existence, so what's behind it? This whole thing we're seeing is just some spinning and appearing is something. Very interesting. So of course what happens is the changing, so everything we see energy changing, meaning change means something's behind it. Wave means there's water behind. So here we say all this changing, there's something behind which can't be the change. If that thing behind is changing, what's behind that change? Eventually you'll get to something that isn't part of the change. And that's going to be, Vedanta says, what is satyam, what is real? That which is there in the three periods of time, past, present, future, always there. Like this. If not, meaning it's a change, meaning it has a borrowed quality, so borrowed from something. So we have to see that. And to say it just barred like in a circle, it doesn't make sense. I don't have any money, so ask Shaila, do you have? She says, I don't have money, so ask Shri, and Shri will ask me. It doesn't work. Eventually it has to come from somewhere. It can't that it came from nowhere like this. You know, they can spin up conspiracy theories that make things up, but that's, you know, has no base. So this, for there to be no base, doesn't make sense. So there has to be the base eventually. So we call this the satyam, like that. So this, when in Vedanta also, when we're analyzing, looking into these things, we look at it from the samashti perspective, meaning from the universal perspective. That's one we have to look because the whole world is here. So what's the truth behind it, the base behind it? We also look at it from the vyashti, the individual perspective too. We have to look from both of them like this. So when you look from the individual perspective on this, Adi Guru Shankara in his commentary, he gives a nice explanation. He says, anything you see, there are like two different levels you're seeing, or two parts. Like I see two people sitting in front of me here now, right? Then I turn and I see the people on the screen here, right? Then I turn and I look at the clock there. Now, when I see two people in front of me, 3D, right, here like this, then I turn here and I look at the screen and it's everybody in little squares and this. The screen here replaced what I saw here. I look at the clock, it replaced the other one. So certain things are replaced. But the knowingness, the fact that there's something there that's the same because there's a continuity. If not, I wouldn't feel a sense of continuity. So there's a certain knowingness that's constant there throughout all my experiencing. I see something, I'm aware I'm seeing it. Now I'm hearing. So there's also a knowingness that I'm hearing. Now I feel some pain in my arm, let's say. There's a knowingness that I feel the pain. So he calls this, there's sat-buddhi and asat-buddhi. Sat-buddhi, the knowingness, the actual knowingness. Asat-buddhi, just the apparent knowingness, the surface knowingness, if you want. And so the sat-buddhi is always there. Because always there's the sense I know, I'm aware, I perceive. That's always there. It's like if you have the stage and different acts come on the stage is always there. Stage is there, but different things come and go. So these come and go, so they can't be intrinsic, as for me, for the individual, they can't be intrinsic, because if they were intrinsic, they have to always be there. But it comes and it goes, comes and goes. But what is constantly there, this is the, will be sat, because sat, that which is there all the time. So when I look at myself in Vedantic inquiry, what's there all the time? But I'm so caught up in what's going on that stage, not what the stage is, that I get caught up in that. And there's a nice point that Swami Paramarthanandaji gives on this. He says, if your sense of being, sense of wellness, depends on a setup, you know, some setup on the stage, if it depends on a setup, soon you'll be upset because it'll get switched, and then then I'll get angry, or I'll get confused, or I'll get depressed, or something like this. And then this is what happens. So what is the base? That's the important thing, because that base I'm there always. If I'm on that solid base, no problem. Right? I have friends that are going to the church today, right? Then there's somewhere that Jesus said, if you build your house on the solid foundation, you're fine, but you build it on the sand, then before you know it, you know, when the right time comes, like this one ashram I know, small ashram near Uttarkashi, very beautiful flowers, very nice place. This one lady, Mahatma, she's British, been there for 40, 50 years, Nanima, amazing, so loving, and so this, her ashram was taken away because they built it right on the sand. So one year in Gangaji decided to, you know, a lot of rains, Gangaji decided that land is mine, finished, gone, like this. So foundation. So my foundation is in the superficial parts of my personality, on the asat buddhi, then that'll eventually be shaken. But in sat buddhi on the base, then there's nothing to be shaken like this. So this is when I look at it from the individual perspective. So here it's saying, na sato vidyate bhavaha. So bhavaha, the actual, you know, intrinsic existence, isn't there for the asat, anything asat, that is meaning borrowed the existence, borrowed something, it doesn't have an intrinsic existence. That's what we say is mithya. And then na bhava vidyate sataha, what's always there it's intrinsic, so it can't not be there. It'll always be there. Ubhayarapi drishtantaha, both of these were seen by the tattva darshibihi, by those who know the tattva, the essence, like this. The tattva, tat, meaning that, and tattva, the essence of that. What is the essence of what exists? Those who know this. Through this, so they know both, like this, through this viveka. So literally, as we look into it, it's making, you know, refining our viveka slowly, slowly, to look into it closer and closer as we study this. Look closer and closer to be able to differentiate between the two. And then when you differentiate, it's easier to see the difference with the anatma, that which is changing, isn't essentially me. Atma, that which isn't changing, isn't me, because it's there all the time. So this is the essence, what we're looking to in this verse here, which again is a key one. And now in the other verses coming up, we'll point to other points about this, other points about this Vedantic vision. So let's see how he continues here.
Avinashitu tad
vidhihi.
Avinashitu tad vidhi.
Yena sarvamidam tatam.
Yena sarvamidam tatam.
Anasham avyayasyasya.
Vinasham
avyayasyasya.
Vinasham avyayasyasya.
Na kaschit kartum arhati.
Na kaschit kartum arhati.
Yeah, the third pada is a little tongue twister. Vinasham avyayasya asya. So it's three words. Vinasham avyayasya asya. Vinasham, the destruction, avyayasya asya, asya of this, avyayasya of the unchanging, like this. So destruction of the unchanging. Know that Atma to be the imperishable one by which all this is pervaded. No one can bring about the destruction of this changeless one. So here he adds another thing about it. Yena, so avinashitu tadvidhi. So this one is indestructible. What is the Atma is indestructible. This is what pointing out, which we heard before. The heat of the fire you can't get rid of. Heat of the water you can get rid of. Right? The color, the table, the color I can get rid of, but the wood is always there like this. So the substance behind everything you can't get rid of. The substance behind the person you can't get rid of. Same thing there all the time. You can't destroy that in this way. So in this one, so tadvidhi, you know, you have to know this. You have to look into it, know, not just leave it as, you know, something else. My guru knows, so very good. But then good. The guru knows, so learn, so the guru will point it out so you can know. Because otherwise, when you need it, then, you know, I'm in big trouble. I'll call, oh, please help me, you know, like this. So yes, so we're looking into, so I will know. Because in the end, I want to be independent. I don't want to, you know, just otherwise it's, the clarity isn't there. Then he adds here, yena sarvamidam tatam, by which all this is pervaded. Meaning that this sat, which talked about, or brahman, is all-pervading. That's why the name Brahman, because of all-pervasiveness, because it comes from the root brih, and the word brih means to be large, so meaning it's all-pervading. There's nowhere where it isn't. It's not limited to anything like this, in this way. So this is another point given them about Brahman. It's not just not destroyable, but anything that isn't all-pervading will have to eventually, meaning if there's a difference between it and something else. The moment you've multiple, there has to be, it can't not change if there is something else other than it. Because then if there's something other than it, then those two things meet. There's some sort of interchange or some sort of friction or something. You can't have it not be changing. Anything that comes like this, you're not going to be able to say yes. It's always there. So this is why we say no. So this point, all-pervading. And one of the examples that's given so much for this is the space. Space is used so much in the analysis in Vedanta. Very helpful. If there wasn't the space, we wouldn't have an example right in front of us that we could say, you know, similar to this. What a wonderful example we have like this in the manifest world. Because space is all-pervasive, right? Is there anywhere where space is not? No, doesn't matter if things are in the space or not, space is there. Okay. Things come and go, do the space get disturbed? There's too much action today, right? Too much action, I have a headache from all this action. Nothing's happening, I'm bored. No, the space is just there. Whatever comes and goes, it's fine in this way. Then it's homogeneous, all this. So it's very wonderful example to point out, like this, the all-pervasiveness. So this is an important thing, how it points this out to us. Now, what happens then is, now, if the Atma is, you know, so Brahman we said like this, Atma we say also all-pervasive. You say, how is it all-pervasive? I feel very limited. What do you mean by that? Well, the upadhi, remember the body, we call it an upadhi. How do I know body is there? I'm aware of it, right? If I don't feel the body now, I'm still aware, right? If the body's numb, or I did some nice yoga, I sit for a minute or so, oh wow, I don't, where's the body? So I feel the body. The body is in the awareness, is the awareness in the body or body in awareness, right? At first I'll say the awareness is in the body, but then how I know the body is there, I'm aware, because so the body is within field of awareness that I am. So meaning that, not limited to this. Same with the mind. The mind, I'm aware of the thoughts, I'm aware of the moods, the emotions. I get caught up in them, but then if I step back and I see afterwards, well, it comes and goes, but I'm there. So the moment you drop out idea of limitation, body, mind, then where? So it's a habit, I'm limited like this. But from awareness perspective, Atma perspective, space-like awareness like this. So this way then, you can't say that the Atma is limited one place. There's actually a nice thing about that, which explains nicely. We say there is the space, right? We call it bhutakasha, because it's it's both an element, and it's also with the, all the elements are here. I'm here, and there are the elements here. There's the earth, there's the air, there's the fire, all this. So there's an element here, which is space. It manifests in the world. So that's one space. Now, subtler than this, we say is the chidakasha. Actually, no, chitta akasha. Chitta akasha is the mental space. Because, right, you experience things. Where do you experience them? Your thoughts, your dream. Where do you experience? There's a space in which it's experienced. So this is more subtle. Now, which is more subtle, the physical space or the mental space? The physical is always grosser. The physical space is in your mental space. We talk about physical space. How do you know it? Only in your mental space. There's nothing you can know outside of your mental space. So this is more subtle, more pervasive, right? In this way. So this is the mental space. Now, you drop your mind, your thoughts, you're still aware. Where do you experience your mind? Where do you experience your body? In your awareness. So we call this chitta akasha. First one, second there was chitta akasha, chitta akasha, mental. And more subtle, chit akasha, so it becomes chitta akasha. So chitta akasha is the space of awareness. More than space of awareness, space-like awareness, because it's not really space, but space-like awareness. So you experience everything within the space-like awareness. As though you have a field of awareness, and then everything you experience in that, everything comes and goes. There's sat-buddhi, if you want to say, like we said before. So one awareness within this everything. So then, now, are there multiple spaces or one space? Now, when you look from the upadhi perspective, you live in your house. Down the block, I live in my house. Somebody lives a mile away in their house. Each one has some space enclosed in their house. Right, but the, you know, let's not a wish thing, that eventually at some point in time, after 200 years, whatever, the houses are gone. Okay, we don't have to make it a disaster, just over time houses will be gone anyway, right? After 200 years, where are the houses? Did the space change? So what happens is the space seemingly is, from the perspective of the upadhi, of the houses, the spaces are now separate from each other, right? Perspective of the space, there's never been a separation. So from the perspective of our bodies, yes, we're separate in this and everything, yes, okay. You know, that we can also start questioning, but we won't for now, because we can't do it, you can't do everything in one day. So separate. Perspective of our mind, right? Sukshma sharira, subtle. So separate, you know, I'm living in my mind, you're living in your mind, like this. But then perspective, so of chidakasha, of the awareness, then there, if you'd say separate, what separates? Here the body can, just like the houses, the walls are separating the space. But when the, beyond the wall, there isn't a separation of the space. So behind the upadhi, behind the body and the mind, there isn't a separation of the of Atma, space-like awareness. You can't say there's a separation. That's why Brahman, we look from the world perspective, is one. Individual, I look from the space perspective, chidakasha perspective, is one. So it's the same thing, one space. So that's why we look from the both angles, but we're looking at the same thing. Here we look at space, and here we look at Atma or Brahman, we say it's the same thing. So seemingly I, the conscious being, is one thing, and the universal consciousness, universal existence, one thing. But really speaking, one thing. It's seemingly multiple or different, but we can't, it's not really separate like this. So this is an important caveat from this. All pervasiveness has to be this. Otherwise, multiple all-pervading Atma, unlimited Atmas. How does that make sense? Like multiple spaces, you'll say. How does that work? You know, one will say, my God is in and through everything. No, my God is in and through everything. You know? Like this. What does that say? It sounds like the little kids arguing, my daddy's stronger than your daddy. Like this. What is it? You know, what is that? What is real understanding? Talking about, in the end, talking about same kind of thing. So, in any case. So, now, one thing about this is, okay, so when we look then at the world, at the changing phenomena and everything, then a nice example, analogy you can give, we have this chair here. Let's say you have a very antique chair. Some people like all these antiques, they keep them and everything. It's antique, it's really nice, very beautiful and very costly. But because it's so old, you know, it's rickety. So it's very nice for everything, for display, but just do not, you shouldn't sit on it. If you sit on it then, anybody come sit on it, they'll get sued for $100,000 because the chair is bad. So you can't sit on it because it won't support you. Otherwise, it's good for everything. It's very nice and everything. So you don't have to get rid of the chair. You don't have to not like the chair, throw it away or break it and get rid of it. You don't have to. But you just have to understand then, it's not there for supporting you and sitting on it. That's all. Otherwise, there's no problem with that chair. So with the whole changing phenomena here, vairagya doesn't mean I don't like it, like I hate that chair. I don't like it. I want to get rid of this. Because what good is that going to do? Going to cause turmoil in your mind, right? Do I just want turmoil in my mind for some reason? I don't like that. Somebody doesn't like the changing, they'll always be in a bad mood because the changing is there all the time. What are they going to do, the poor people? And actually some people, this is one fault we can find in somebody just doing the yoga very deeply and not this understanding, is getting used to a certain state of mind. And then when the state of mind not there, the mind can be agitated. Right? There's a nice story, they say that the guru tells the disciple, make some tea. And the guru sits, meditates, and goes into samadhi, sits there for an hour or two, like this. Then wakes up, and then sees the tea there. Then takes it and says, why is the tea cold? What's wrong with you? So the changing then, that's not with rag. The thing is raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes, or you know, I have likes and dislikes towards the changing, or if I see it from the deeper perspective, that, what difference does it really make? You know, what difference does it really make what the external thing is? It'll be like this, like that. You know, as an aspirant, yes, I want to admit, I do my best so that the external circumstances in a way that easier for me to deal with, easier to look into these things, yes. And so I do things more dharmic way because it'll cause less trouble and everything and I'll be more peaceful. So for this, yes. But from a deeper perspective, when I look at everything, then it's the change. It doesn't have substance. So what difference does it really make to the, you know, to the space? What difference does it really make to me, the Atma, to Brahman? So then the likes, dislikes don't really have a place there. This is something to be aware of, because vairagya people take as a dislike for worldly things. As a dislike, it can be useful to break likes, just as a countermeasure. Like this one poster I saw at a doctor's office years back. It was very nice. It had a picture of a lady with tar all over her, and it said, if smoking did to you on the outside what it does on the inside, you'd stop smoking. Mm-hmm. So this, to make somebody dislike smoking, it can be helpful because they're doing something unhealthy. So to break something, that can be understood, but again, that's just like a medicine. It's not just, you know, somebody can use it. If something I'm caught up in that's not healthy, not good for me, and not good for my mental health, and I'm doing something to help to push it away, to break it, as seeing it negatively can be fine. But then afterwards has to be, you know, if that also, if I have a dislike towards it, then I have, it's also sort of attachment, you can say. So real vairagya is, I'm indifferent to what are those changing things, not liking them like this. Then there isn't a full maturity or full understanding at a state like this, in that way. Actually, there's a nice thing that happened like this. Swami Chidananda-ji. Swami Chidananda is Swami Shivananda's successor. So he went somewhere, and some brahmachari, much younger person, came with him, some disciple. So they went, and of course, where they go, the people feed them. And most people know they make sattvic food and all. But someplace they went, the people made food with onion garlic like this. So the brahmachari was kind of taken back, didn't know what, you know, felt uncomfortable and wasn't wanting to eat. And so Swami Chidananda said to him, "Oh, brahmachari-ji, they made very delicious food, you eat extra like this." So it's, yes, have discipline, but now the stiffness is the dislike. Yes, you don't eat with something happy. You know, if they probably put some non-veg food, there would probably be a border where you'd say, you know, okay, you know, thank you so much, we know it's not eating, whatever. There has to be some limitation like this, but like this, okay. So not to be too rigid in that way is very essential, because the rigidity then, it's dislike, but in any, like this, with the brings the raga dvesha like this, so something just to be aware of. Then also with this thing, with the leaning that we gave with the chair, then what happens is, at earlier stages, like people doing bhakti, to lean on the God will help me, is okay, because I need something to lean on, and actually it helps. Somebody that doesn't have any, feels there's no base, then they're going to have a much harder time in life. Where are they going to? You know, somebody to take care of them. You know, so people lean on one or two things. They lean either on the God or they lean on the dog, right? People have a dog because of this. Think of that. Because the people won't be there for you all the time, but the dog will always be there for you. But in any case, so you lean on the God, it works. But then it's still, I'm dependent on that idea of the God or my connection with the God like this. So it's fine, but that again we say is just temporary thing. Like with your mom when you're little, temporarily you're going to, you know, when need her for security. If you're already 20 and you need to hold on to your mom for security, then, you know, that's not going to be as mentally healthy like this. Something there isn't going okay. So here also, at first I lean on the God, yes, very good, but then eventually I have to find, you know, that's beyond and beyond, then I have to see in and through everything in myself. So in this way, Vedanta is pointing that out, that eventually, you know, the God's everywhere, so isn't the God in you too, in this way, right? So if everywhere, it has to be in you too. Right? So you say, there's me and the God. Whatever you say is me, there isn't the God in through that too. Like this. This actually, for Lakshmi, to add that when your son's arguments about the God, you know, the discussion you had, just bring that one point, have him contemplate on it. The God put me in this situation, I'm playing that game. Isn't that you're part of that? He'd say it's like the computer game, whatever. You're part of that too. It's not that you're a separate one playing that. Tell him to think about it a little bit and then discuss it. Because then it shows a whole different story. It's not the God's there, I'm here. The God's in and through me. Right? They say the God's in one's heart. How? The Atma is Brahman. So then, I have an idea that I'm separate, but where's that idea? The idea in my mind. How? It's my conditioning. The God is there, you know, right here. Not in that temple, but in this temple. Or yes, the God isn't here. The God is in that temple and in through everything. But what about in me? No. There, it's me, you know, I can't. And people say the God's in and through everything, but they put some contingencies. There's the heaven, the God is surely there. There's other places, the God is there, and the holy places. The hell, no, the God isn't there. Now the God is limited. The poor God doesn't have, you know, like U.S. visa, you can go to 90% of the countries, but there are a few countries you can't get into. The God can go to most places, but no, it can't go in. The God can't go into the hell. Not allowed there. Doesn't seem to work. So all pervading mean in and through everything, including in and through me, in this way. So this is something to, you know, that we point out, very important to look into like this. And last point about this, with this all-pervasiveness, like the space, is, again, we go back to the space, the walls are something temporary. So when the house is broken, the space became one. But was the space ever separate? From the wall's perspective, was separate. From the space's perspective, it was never separate. It was always one thing. Seems to be. So I, the conscious being, like this, I seem to be separate because of the upadhi. For when the upadhi is not there, and when after the upadhi goes, where's the separateness? Before the upadhi was there, where's the separateness? So seems to be in this way. Every night we have a deep sleep, right? We need the deep sleep because we need to go a little bit back to ourselves. We need a break from ourselves, like this. The God gave us the dream so he can vent off some things. And then afterwards we have the deep sleep so we can drop everything, just go back into myself. At that time in deep sleep, where was the limitation? You drop the body and the mind, where's the limitation? And we love it because, there's no limitation like this. But it's like the space inside the wall wanting to become one with the space. But it never was separate like this, so this is also all-pervasive means. All-pervasive, not partially. There's Vishishta Dvaita, which, yes, you are eternal in this, and you are limited. It's kind of like saying, it's day and night. What do you mean day and night, same time? It's black and it's white, same time. Either it is, it's this or that. You can't be both. It doesn't work like that. So, some idea. We say, possibly it has a good pointers as a preparation. Possibly. Probably has some valid things, but from higher perspective, it doesn't make sense. If you're unlimited, you're unlimited. You can't be unlimited and limited. It doesn't add up. Show one thing that's like this. You can say seemingly limited, and unlimited, yes. Seem, that you can say. But you can't say it's both limited and unlimited. That's contradiction. Contradiction doesn't make sense like that. So in any case, let's continue here. Oh, nakashchit kartumarhati, no. Avyase, nakashchit kartumarhati, nothing can be done to that atma, meaning the house, the city can come condemn the house, like across the street, they condemned two houses, so they tore them down, rebuilt. They could tear it down, but they couldn't do anything to the space there. So the body can be destroyed, but not the Atma, because the Atma isn't limited to that. So what can be done to Atma? Nothing can be done like this. So let's go to next verse here. Antavanta ime deha.
Antavanta ime deha.
Nityasyokta sharirinaha.
Nityasyokta sharirinaha.
Anashino prameyasya.
Anashino prameyasya.
Tasmad yudhyasva bharata. It is said, perishable are these bodies which belong to the eternal, imperishable, and unobjectifiable Atma. Therefore fight, O Arjuna. So when Sri Krishna is saying, it is said, he's usually saying, this is what is said in Upanishads, this is the vision of the rishis, this is the absolute truth, like absolute reality. That's just a matter of speech like this. It is said like this. So, antavanta ime deha. The anta, the beginning and an end. The body has a beginning and an end, as we know, like this. Nityasya ukta sharirinaha, of the eternal embodied. So the Atma within the body, who owns it? You know, it's of mine, it's mine. So of the Atma, like this. This is a nice word, shariri, shariri, meaning the embodied. You know, you have the car, it's your car. Are you limited to the car? No. You have for some time, and then it's gone. So you have the body, it's yours for some time, and then it goes like this, in this way. So they have a beginning and an end. Like this, we know they change in everything, just like any borrowed attribute will be there for some time, and then it'll be gone, in the same way, like that. Anashinaha, and it is indestructible. Now what happens before also said, nityasya, anityasya uktaha. So what happens is nityasya is eternal. Anashi means indestructible. So the reason they say, it said here, why it says eternal and indestructible, because yes, Atma is eternal. But then you might think Atma is like the earth, you know, meaning earth, not just earth as prithivi, but earth principle. Earth principle will always be there, right? Always will be there. Heat principle, always be there. As long as universe is there, it's there. It goes into potential state when whole world is gone. It comes back, means it's still there because there's still heat, you know. So you might say it's like this kind of eternal. So it's both, you can't destroy, but it's also eternally there, always there. Because there can be a difference. The earth is always there, but it can be destroyed because it can be made into something else, transformed into energy, so it's destroyed into some other form like this. So something can always be there, but still be destructive in the way that it becomes something else. So it became something else, so what is really behind it? Just subtle point that's put up there. But then it says, aprameyaha, aprameyaha. Not something objectifiable. Something objectifiable means either you know it through perception or conception. Either I perceive it through the senses, I can see, or I can feel it, or I can hear it, or I can taste, or I can smell it, like this. There has to be something tangible through the senses. So everything in the world, we say, is tangible through the senses. Or conceivable through the mind. Like some of the things that they calculate about the universe, that they find out, you know, they see exoplanets, other places where they say those can possibly have water, so can possibly have, you know, life. They say like in the Goldilocks zone of their solar systems. Amazing. They have a little bit of information from perception. There has to be some perception. The perception means there's some infrared radiation, something they calculate. Some information came in. And then from that, how they can extrapolate. Very amazing, like this. So that's also conceivable through the mind. I conceive of something that I know. For inference, the classical example is, you know, where there's smoke, there is fire. Because you've seen many times fire, you've seen smoke. So you see smoke somewhere, you know, earlier last year there was smoke, nearby, big thing of smoke, I went to see, somebody put some barbecue, just left a big flame in this block away, okay, but first I went to see because I knew smoke, there has to be fire, like this. So in this way, I didn't see this fire, but I knew it's there, like this, because of conception. So we say, so Atma will never be an object of perception or conception. Like this. That's another thing here. Aprameyaha, you'll never perceive it. So I say, I won't perceive it. What do you mean? So how can it be there if I don't perceive? I have to see to believe it. Otherwise, what are you talking about like this? So this is another important point here. So what happens is, here's a question. Have you ever seen your own eyes? Anybody seen their own eyes? You've never seen your own eyes. You see reflection, but your own eyes, have you ever seen? No, you've never seen. Right? If you Never, if there weren't any mirrors, would you have a doubt that you have eyes? You wouldn't have a doubt because you know that everybody sees through eyes. You know if it's covered, I don't see. So you know that they're eyes. So in this way, it's clear that it is like this. You have no question about it. There's another nice example I like is Swami Sivanandaji. There are so many photos of his, right? So many. Probably, you know, he knew devotees who would help them, inspire them, so he hadn't let them take many pictures of him like this. What happens is, some years ago I got this book, and it has, you know, many of these pictures of his. At the end, somebody I never heard of, there's a picture of this one Swamiji there, Swami Sharadananda. They said he was the photographer, all these pictures he took. I never knew like this. So what happens is, why I never saw a picture of him, because he took all the pictures. So there had to be somebody there to take the picture. Obviously there was somebody, you know, nowadays you'll say automatic this, but you know, take it, you know, the Swami Sivanandaji left his body early 1960s. Before that they didn't, there was always a cameraman, right? So there had to be some person behind the camera. So somebody had to, so the fact that there were pictures means there was a camera person there. So I didn't have to see the camera person, now I know, you know, oh, it was this one, where, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of people are thankful to him for the service he did taking the pictures. But the thing is, we wouldn't, you know, we never knew, because we never see the one behind. So you never see the one behind this, right? Because you're the one behind the, you know, you see, I experience, you don't see it like this. Now what happens is, the more subtle something is, the less tangible. When talking about the model of the construct of the universe, we say that the earth has five qualities. You can smell it, you can taste it, you can see it, you can touch it, you can hear it, like this. But then we say when we get to subtler than earth, water principle, four of those are there, but not the taste. We say the taste, not the smell, sorry. The smell comes from the earth particles, but not, they have to be in the air or in the water. So the taste is, sorry, taste, smell. The smell is going to be, you're not going to get. And then if you go from there, cellar water to fire, you're going to have, you can feel it, you can see it, right? You can touch it, but no taste or smell. Of course, Indian cuisine proved that wrong because of the spiciness of the food. Birds, you know, that's that's just a joke on the side. But the thing is, it has three. It's more subtle, and then air, more subtle. Air will only have, you can hear it, you can feel it, but you can't see it. Right? You can feel the wind, but no, only two. Then space, even less. Space, they say, sound comes. Sense of direction, your ears, that's one thing. And the base, air, we say air needs for the sound waves, but the base vibration of the universe would be through the space. So more subtle, less tangible. The space isn't tangible at all. We conceive of it, but it's not tangible, because there's no tangibility you can see. So the more subtle, more pervasive also like this, but here the important thing, less tangible, less conceivable. So Atman, which is the most subtle, how are you going to conceive of it? You can't conceive of the most subtle. And also, you are that, what you, just like your eyes, you don't see, you can't, always, you can only perceive something else, not yourself, like this. So you'll never see, but you do you need proof that you're a conscious being? Does somebody have to prove it to you? somebody's to tell you that. Nobody's to tell. I know that I know. Are you aware? Yes. How do you know? I just know. What do you mean? Prove it to me. Can you prove it to anybody? You can't prove it. So already, you know, it's already almost there that the AI thing, you're not going to know, is it a person behind it or is it a machine behind it? You don't know. But behind you, you know. The AI thing won't know I'm an existing thing. I won't know because just some program. But the conscious being, no, there's no question I know. So it's, you don't need the conception perception. And if you conceive or perceive, mean it's going to be an object, something other than you. Because this is one important thing with the law of perception. When you perceive something, it's always something other than you. You never perceive yourself. That's why the eyes don't see themselves like this. So something other than you, you'll perceive. So when we go to the bottom perception, what's behind all the perception, behind the seeing and the hearing, the thinking, you're the conscious being behind, it's not something you'll perceive, but then you have no question about it. There's no question in your mind if it's there or not. How can you have a question in your mind? So this is where aprameya, pointing that out, not possible to, not perceivable. So when they, you know, they say, okay, somebody dies and the soul leaves and this, some illustration, okay, if something happens, yeah, sukshma sharira maybe does something in this, but atma, not perceivable. You can't say atma goes. Like say, I saw the space leave the house when the space was, when the house was destroyed. You can't, how are you going to see that? So same way, you can't. It's not something that you will perceive like this. So let's stop here for today, and then we'll continue looking into this next time.
Purnamidham Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Somebody gave a note here. So before we finish, anybody has any questions? We need this, and then in a few minutes we can discuss. So, in that case, we'll finish for today.